Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be discussing in this episode are the top 300 comic sales as reported through Diamond to retailers for May 2017. Obviously, this is sell-in information. This is what left Diamond's distribution centers going into stores. It's not what the stores sold to us, the readers. Technically, it's not even what the publishers necessarily sold to Diamond, because Diamond keeps a little extra for damages or reorders or stuff like that. And the amount they do that for varies, obviously, by title to title. Some they may have a lot more. Others, it's like, hey, we want to get rid of everything we got. I don't know. Anyways, same basic caveats as usual. I'm trying to think if there are any others I forgot to include this time. But
I would assume Diamond also has some for non-direct market resellers, which wouldn't be in here too, right?
I don't know if they do non-direct stuff at all or not. That's a kind of a great question. I'm going to be going to San Diego Comic-Con shortly, a couple of weeks. And if I can find somebody good to ask those sorts of questions, and if they feel there are other caveats I should be giving out each episode, just because they may.
I would assume, is Diamond Europe a separate agent, or are they considered... Like, do the publishers make, you know, put one PO from Diamond and that's both, or do they separate to Europe, which I know, again, is not in these numbers?
My understanding is Diamond UK is another company. It may be a subsidiary of whatever the parent company is for Diamond and all the other things Steve Jeppy owns and whatnot. So I would imagine there's different invoices and stuff like that, but I don't know that for 100% certain. I would think if it wasn't kind of separated that way, we would be seeing those numbers reported here.
Fair enough.
So if we look at the top 300 this time around, it's actually the strongest it's been in 2017, although that's not saying a whole lot because we've had a couple of, just so-so months. The breakdown of it, unsurprisingly, Marvel had the lion's share of it with 45.36% of the total units for the top 300 comics. DC had 36.31%. Image had another 9.06%. IDW, 3.24%. And then Dark Horse, rounding out the premier publishers, another 1.62%, which accounts for... 95.58% of the total units in the top 300 comics were the premier publishers. Which, again, no big surprise. It's actually maybe a little higher than it sometimes is. We split it out by dollars. The ordering doesn't change any, but the percentages do. Marvel had 49.59% of the total retail dollars for the top 300 comics. DC, 31.92%. Image 8.8%, IDW had 3.39%, and Dark Horse had 1.64%. So the numbers kind of skew a little bit in Marvel's favor. Again, reflection of a higher average cover price there. So I'm kind of good when, kind of happy when like DC's percentage is lower for the dollars than by the units, because that means kind of across the things they have a little bit of a lower average price than some of the other publishers. And, you know, I'm one of those crazy people who likes comics to be less expensive, but, you know, it's not the way the industry's moving. Certainly not the way Marvel seems to be moving on some of their stuff. What do we got from the back half? The only publisher in the back half to do over 8% is Boom Studios with 1.06% of the total units, 1.25% of the total retail dollars. And when I say total retail dollars, I take the units, I multiply it by the cover price, I go with that. Obviously, that's not the money changing hands and stuff, because the retailers get a discount depending on how much they order and various things like that. But it's at least a metric to be using.
Marvel having a full third of the list plus also seems... I don't think we've ever seen a publisher with quite that high a percentage of the units. Except maybe the time DC, the second month with the new 52 and all the reorder. And
you mean the number of items?
Yes.
We've seen cases a while back where both Marvel and DC had a third each, over 100. And that was before DC kind of scaled back with the new 52 to about 52 mainstream titles or whatever. So there were definitely times that I think the other publishers were getting crowded out. For a while, Diamond was releasing the top 400 comics, I think partially in response to that. But when you figure that a third of the items on the list were Marvel, well over a quarter of them were DC, and then, you know, DC had well over a third of the units, and Diamond was closing in on half the units. I mean, just the percentage of units between Marvel and DC is 81.67% of the total units for the top 300. This is just an incredibly lopsided playing field where you've got Marvel and DC playing at a scale that nobody else is even close to for the most part. Image, I think, is a tier below that, because they're doing, like, what, 643,700 units compared to the 2.5 and 3.2 million for Marvel and DC.
What's interesting is these are 300 items. IDW really does the best. Well, IDW and Dark Horse and Boom actually do the best per title, if that makes any sense.
No, I see what you're saying. Well, by title is a dicey metric these days.
By item.
By item, okay.
Because Marvel gets 45% of the units with 33%, okay, which, again, per item makes they're doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
DC has 27% of the units and 36.31% of the units. Again, a positive number. Image, similar slight advantage, 9.6% of the units, 14% of the items on the list is actually backwards, meaning the average title at Image does worse, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then IDW, I wish there was a better way I could explain this, but yes.
Well, it comes down to, and this is part of why I've often tossed out the question of, does anybody have some good metrics to be using for kind of the health of a publisher? And I think what we're circling around here is the number of items you put out, or at least what we can see here is the number of items in the top 300. And of course, that's not the same thing as the number of items they come out with. But the fewer items you come out with and the more sales you have, the better you've done. More reward for less effort. You know, if you've got two publishers that are each selling, say, 50,000 comics, and one did it with one comic and one did it with 50 comics, there's a world of difference between how those two are doing, both in terms of the effort involved, but there's also, because I would say the one that did with one title did it a lot easier, but I would also say, though, that the one with the one title is potentially more volatile and at risk, because if something happens to that one title, it gets delayed, it doesn't ship for a month, whatever, they got nothing. Whereas if there was a publisher that did the 50,000 across 50 different comics, one of them ships late, yeah, they lose a 50th of their sales if it's evenly divided. I mean, again, this is all hypothetical, but you know what I mean.
Yes, no, I do.
So, I mean, there's a certain amount of the fewer titles you can do it with, the fewer issues you can do it with, also the fewer creators you can do it with, kind of the better off you are in some regards, in terms of just cash outlay or whatever, but also the more at risk you are because you're dependent on fewer things. You get closer to kind of those single points of failure or whatever. And I really think that part of the challenge from a publishing perspective on this is mitigating the risk, be it as simple as a creator gets sick for a week or two and that delays their output or something, or, you know, gets into a car accident, or, you know, whatever happens. So mitigating that risk versus how quickly can you get things out? Do you have known quantities? Because you don't want to spend all your time and editorial resources constantly having to look for new talent and vetting. Are they reliable? Are they good? Do they click with the audience? Which I see as different things, just for clarity.
Yeah. It is interesting to compare items to units, though.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if your percentage of units is higher than your percentage of items, on average, the items are doing better than if, obviously, if it's lower, whereas on average, they'd be doing worse.
Well, if you look at, say, Dark Horse, which had 11 items on the list, and Image had 44. That's a 4-to-1 difference there. And the sales, a little bit more than a 4-to-1 in Image's favor. But then if you compare Dark Horse to Marvel, where it's almost a 10-to-1 difference, not quite, it's 11 to 101. The difference in sales there, though, is just beyond a complete order of magnitude. It's like 30 times or something, because it's the 3.2 million versus, you know, 115,000.
Well, yeah. In theory, there's 300 items on the list, which means each item is 0.33% of the list.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as you can see, the publishers that each have one item on the list, none of them actually meet that. You know, if you have one item, you're 1/300th of the list. But those publishers, Udon, Abstract, Black Mask, American Mythology, and Bongo, neither one of them did 1/300th of the total sales. Meaning those titles, in theory, are underperforming the list as a whole.
Well, I think what you're, I see where you're going with that. I think it's a great point. But I think what we're kind of circling around there is, yes, the each item is essentially a third of a percentage point in terms of number of items.
Yes.
300, you know, the math, pretty easy. Even I can do that in my head. But in terms of the an item underperforming versus the list or whatever, obviously the ranking of those 300 items goes from the best seller to the worst seller. You're at the bottom, you're doing less than the one at the top. Go figure. But the drop-off rate is something that, you know, I've talked about it at times, where it just, it goes, it drops so fast sometimes. You know, if we look over at the list itself, we've actually got six items over the 100,000 mark, but we've only got, 28 over 50,000.
Yes, and hey, our new Guardians of the Galaxy number one is the mythical 80,000 seller.
I know, and it's certainly not going to be there with the next issue, because that's down at 51,000.
But yes, over the years, John and I have noticed, John much more so than I, that 80,000 to 85,000 is a very difficult number of units to sell. You either sell more or less than that, but it's almost impossible to sell that exact number.
Yeah, for some reason, the 80,000s, it's like a no man's land. And I don't know if some of that... I need to see how far back that goes, because if it predates kind of a lot of the crazy 1 in 10, 1 in 20 variants and stuff, conceivably it's a factor of that, but I think it's just a matter of almost, this is kind of that break point between it's a good seller or it's a hit, or, you know, whatever terminology you'd want to use.
Yeah.
You know, there's a, it's broken away from the pack at that point. Which is ironic, because, I mean, because it's a rounder number, 100,000 tends to be just almost the universally agreed upon sort of a benchmark, if you will. But I think we could make a definite case that either 80 or 90,000 maybe should be. If we look at the list, man, this is another one of those crazy months where, depending how you look at it, and I mentioned this in my article on CBR.com, and it's also on the Comic Book Page website, either Marvel had the top two selling items, or DC had the top two selling items, or both, depending really on your perspective. I'm going to go with the glasses completely full, so both of them had the best two selling items. Secret Empire number one topped the list, so it's the best selling item, and we'll get to how it is and it isn't in a sec. But it did that with 157,517 units, which is actually down about 6.66% from the Zero issue, which is a little odd, because sometimes Zero issues, particularly for a Marvel event, don't do so well, and then it goes up on a first issue, but okay. But the problem in why that's not the best-selling item, even though it's the top item on the list, once again, we had the second part of the Button crossover with Flash and Batman tying into the whole Rebirth stuff. So Batman number 22, the Lenticular Edition, was at rank number 3 with 114,173 units, to which no doubt somebody's saying, but that's less than 157,000. That is indeed correct. Up until you add in the 72,741 units that the regular edition of Batman did down at rank number 11. This is why I always find it a little entertaining to be watching, because like on the Slack channel we've got for Comic Book Page, people will see the top 10 and, oh, well, look how this did. Oh, it's up, it's down, whatever. They're looking at the rankings. They don't have the index stuff. They certainly don't have the complete picture. And in this case, they didn't have that second entry for Batman at the different price point to realize that you add the two up, and it certainly exceeded the sales of Secret Empire, because it had a total of 186,914 units. So if you're going for contents, Batman wins out. If you're going for particular I can't even say particular comic cover because Secret Empire had multiple variants too. But if you're going for single price point of a comic, then Secret Empire wins out.
And to be fair, those Batman, all versions had a lesser price point than any version of Secret Empire number one.
Yes, even the lenticular was only $3.99 versus the $4.99 for Secret Empire.
Yep.
I'll be honest, I intentionally order the non-lenticular version of these things. Not because I ever really intend to sell my collection or flip the books or anything, but there's a part of me that realized early on that those were likely to be the less available one, and therefore the rarer, and therefore should, in theory, go up in value. And I'll leave that kind of speculation and how best to flip books more to, like, Drew and stuff, because I'm not really doing that. But that was just kind of my mentality as to why. And it's, frankly, a dollar cheaper than the lenticular version.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did the exact same thing, but yeah, it was a buck cheaper, and I don't care about the cover.
Sometimes the lenticular ones can give me headaches, and it's like, I don't need that when sorting my collection. It's hard enough to figure out the title on some stuff to change the angle, and it suddenly dodges on you. It's like, forget that. Flash, of course, 22 had the same lenticular, non-lenticular versions. So at rank 4, we had 104,506 units of Flash lenticular for 22, and then another 59,261 units of the non-lenticular version for 163,767 units, which puts even that above the sales of Secret Empire. Now, just to give a little more perspective on the Secret Empire sales, issue number 2 is down at rank number 6, having dropped 35.89%, and then number 3 is down at rank number 8, having dropped another 9.28%. And what that means is number 2 skated in above that 100,000 mark with 100,983 units, but number 3 dropped well below at 91,611 units. So in the span of the month that it was out, not counting the zero issue, which maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't, whatever, but of the 1, 2, and 3, it dropped a fair amount. And I don't think that's a good sign for that event.
I tend to agree, except again, all of this had to have been pre-ordered. So it's not like anything, but yes, the fact that there was a 35%+ drop and a 10%, we're used to seeing drops on the events. They tend to be much smaller. The 1 to 2, yeah, we'll see 5-6%, and then 1 or 2% after that. But 35 and almost, you know, 9, those are huge drops for an event.
Now, to your point, this is indeed retailer orders and what they expected it to do. Maybe we'll see a lot of reorder activity. Maybe there'll be a groundswell of support for it, whatever. But to me, one of the more telling signs about how that event is doing for Marvel is down at rank 59, where we've got Captain America Steve Rogers number 17. This is the title the event spun out of. It's down 4%. This is a Secret Empire tie-in. It didn't even get a bump in sales for its own event. I mean, to me,
that's a decrease of 4% on a book that was already selling under 38,000.
Yeah, and is the star of the event. If you go and filter column Y of the spreadsheet, and for those who don't have it in front of them, which is pretty much everybody but me and Sam, actually is everybody but me and Sam, unless TJ's listening, is the solicitation blurb column. If you filter that for the phrase Secret Empire, that gives us all the Secret Empire tie-ins. Eventually I'll have a better way to do this. It's not reliant on the solicitation blurb. But by and large, everything that tied in dropped. The exception is Ultimates number 2, which kind of surprised me a little bit. It was actually up 6.57%, which is about 1,140 units. So it's not up a ton, but for a title selling, you know, 18,490 units, that's not too bad. But we're not seeing any sort of a sales bump related to Secret Empire. Now, if you go back to the original Civil War stuff, some of those were getting 4 or 5 times the sales the title would normally get. I attribute this to a couple of things, and virtually none of them are Secret Empire itself. But I think a lot of it is just Marvel's gone back to the well too damn many times on events and people are like, well, maybe I'll get the main event, but I'm not going to go get all of the tie-ins and stuff like that. The sales juice has been leached out of events, I think, tie-in stuff over at Marvel. Or certainly there's plenty of evidence to suggest that being the case.
Yeah, there's so many things in what you just said, several of which are, first off, let's talk about the fact that the Ultimates went up to 18,490. Remember when the Ultimates, when initially the Ultimates came out, it was topping this list?
Well, that was when it was in the Ultimate Universe, and it was the Ultimate Avengers by a pretty hot creative team.
Yes. Oh, is that not what this is anymore?
Oh, no. This is Captain Marvel, it's America, it's Black Marvel, I'm trying to think which other characters are in there, maybe Black Panther, one or two others like that, maybe whatever name, Photon or Ms. Captain Marvel, the Monica Rambeau character from who used to lead the Avengers at one point ages ago. It's a second or third rung would-be Avengers title. It has nothing to do with the one you're thinking.
Okay, so the Ultimates doesn't mean what it used to mean because, well, it's not what it used to be, apparently.
Well, because the Ultimate Universe has been folded into the mainstream universe so they can kind of reclaim those titles. I mean, if you go back to the era you're thinking of for Ultimates, when it was topping the charts.
Yep.
Who was the writer? Was it Mark Millar? It was,
Yeah, it was Mark Millar and, wasn't it Brian Hitch?
Hitch on art, yeah. I was going to say, Top Flight creative team. It starred the Ultimate version of Cap, Thor, Hulk,
and Tony,
Iron Man, yeah, the main, you know, iconic Avengers. And it was just kind of the summer blockbuster style comic book or whatever. This isn't that.
Obviously not.
Yet it was the one that actually went, again, it went up in sales 6 or 7% to 18,000, under 18,500, 18,490. So that's the quote unquote success story of Secret Empire so far. To me, that's just not a good sign for this event.
I agree with you. I don't know if I agree on the reasoning. Has Marvel gone to the event well too many times, or have they just done too many bad events? Or, as we've been talking about a lot on the Slack channel, too many shenanigans with the events. Extra books, ridiculous lateness, the ending being spoiled by the fact that the entire rest of the universe returns long before the event ends.
I honestly don't know how to answer you on that, because have they done too many shenanigans? Absolutely. Some event related, some not. Have some of the events been lackluster? Okay, I'll grant you that. But I think, I mean, they'd had a few that were misfires or whatever, but then they would have another event and it would do okay. This is, and I have to double check the tie-ins on the other events. This is the first one I can think of, though, where you would look at the first month of the event and there was no sales bump to be had on any of the tie-ins.
I agree. I just, part of me thinks a lot of that has to do with the last two events. We all knew Legacy was coming after this, and we were told this was 8 issues. Well, it went to issue number 8.
Well, it was going to be 1 through 8, but then or 1 through 9, and then it got I've lost count of how many times they've expanded it. But I think to your point, whether the other events were good or not, they've got a jaded enough fan base, myself included, that when this event of Secret Empire was announced, people were saying it was going to be delayed, it was going to go long, it was going to have tie-ins, all those things that you were mentioning of just, here are the shenanigans they've done for the last couple events, surely they're going to try to play us again on this one.
Well, and here's the thing. Tie-ins, delays, all of those things I kind of put in a different category. Because those things have happened, you know, Civil War had those things.
Mm-hmm.
A million tie-ins and huge delays. And at the end of the day, I don't think it hurt the Civil War event.
I think it hurt Marvel's sales, but only because of delays and them essentially missing out of an issue or two's worth of sales on most of their books.
Because they delayed the books.
Right.
Because But the Marvel Universe, if you were reading the Marvel Universe, you needed to know what was happening in Civil War, the original one.
But to your point, because the last couple of events have ended after a story arc or so of the titles that were revealing the ending.
Yeah, if you want to follow the Marvel Universe, you just say, oh, one of those number ones coming out, I'll buy those. The events are almost de facto lame duck when they start.
Certainly by the time they end. And that's going to take Marvel a couple of good events that ship on time that they don't steal their own thunder on. And I don't really have the faith or the confidence or any tangible reason to believe that they're going to even try to do that.
Is it? Here's the real question, I guess. Back to, like, let's talk about Civil War. Back then, when the books, when the main title wasn't ready, what did Marvel do? They said, well, we're just delaying everything because we don't want to give away what's going to be in that issue when these other ones come out.
Well, and that was a big to-do back then. A lot of people were upset. A lot of retailers were upset.
A lot of retailers were upset because they had no products for a while.
Uh-huh.
I get that. But as a reader, which is ultimately who you have to make happy, don't you prefer waiting to get the story than getting a story ahead of it that tells you what was going to happen in the story you may never get? Or when you do get it, it's going to be, you won't care and you kind of already know what happened anyways?
No, I agree with you entirely on that. There's a certain aspect of, you know, respect to the story. If the product you were selling at the end of the day is a story to entertain people, you need to protect the integrity of that story with a religious zeal. And that's almost the exact opposite of what many of these publishers are doing, certainly Marvel, where they will have press releases the day or two before a comic's release telling us all about it.
I certainly don't love that stuff. The marketing person in me at least understands that.
No, and
if you can get USA Today to put, hey, big happenings in your book on the front page, you take that opportunity. I get that.
I think there's got to be a way to do it such that it doesn't necessarily spoil the story, but I'll admit I'm not sure exactly how I would handle that and what the best solution is. And I get the need to promote the stuff. And as we can see by the sales upswing we've seen over the last many years where that's been happening, he said sarcastically. I mean, it's... at the end of the day, has there ever been a tangible benefit to them getting that placement in USA Today or wherever they break the story?
Death of Captain America.
Okay. That's an excellent one.
And that's what started the template, and then it's all gone wrong since then, I agree.
Okay. But you're right. You are right. I would also point to the Obama cover of Spider-Man and a few other things that got people into stores.
Yeah.
Now, aside from a couple of blips on the radar, we haven't seen the sales in aggregate kind of show a benefit of that. But I'm not going to blame that on the media just because I don't think it's their fault.
Yeah, no. I mean, the media, they got the item out there. They got people to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that people didn't like it enough to come back and get more then becomes that's on the product itself.
Yeah.
PR can only do so much.
Well, and I think that's a lot of the crux of the problem with these sales is they're treating it like a PR problem, and it's not. It's not a marketing problem. They can get people to try books. They can't get people to stay with books.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was alluding to earlier when we were going through the breakdown and stuff and talking about how items do on average is, I mean, the top item on the list here, again, was that 157,517 units. The top 300 bottoms out with a floor of 5,254 units. And that median value, that middle point of the list, is only 16,025 units, which means half the list is doing less, is doing 16,025 units or less. You know, if you look at the average on that bottom half of the list, it's, 9,653 units. If you look at the average on the top half, which is obviously going to be higher because it's the top half, it's 37,717. So it's what, four times higher.
Yeah.
And again, it's just, nature of the beast with the higher sales being above, no big surprise there. But the average of the list is 23,685 units, which is, 150% of the median point?
Yes, which again, that's a number, kind of like we were talking about, does each title represent its fair share of the list? That's another thing. If the average is higher than the median, there's a problem on one end.
Mm-hmm.
You can argue the problem is the top end's too high, or you can argue the bottom end's too low, depending on how you want to phrase that.
I would argue that the top end is certainly too high because we've got some anomalous stuff there.
Yeah.
And at the bottom, it's not like we had a one item at the bottom that just suddenly tanked or something. They're all around that point. It just seems like if they could retain sales, if when you had an event and you got people excited about a book and they were to check it out, which isn't seeming to happen with Empire, Secret Empire, but whatever, it certainly seemed to happen with the button over at DC with Batman and Flash. Do they stay with the book? Well, we can answer that question too, because Batman number 23 is on the list at 96,542 units, which is better than the sales of the regular version of 22, but below the sales of the lenticular version of 22. Actually, how does it compare to the average? It's, frankly, just a little above the average of the sales of those two, of the lenticular and non-lenticular version.
Yeah.
Whereas Flash 23 is 54,640 units, which is below the 59,261 units of the regular version, well below the 104,506 units of the lenticular, and well below the average of the two.
Whereas Batman kind of fit right in the middle. 23 did.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, to me that puts it more or less on sort of the trend line it was doing anyways. In other words, I don't think Batman suffered or got a huge benefit out of the button. And Flash, how was it doing before? Let me take a look at sales real quick. Oops.
This makes great pod.
Well, it was doing 53,000, so it got a little bit of a bump.
A little bit of a bump, yeah. A
couple of hundred units, 1,000 units maybe, less than that, 800 we'll say. So if it sticks, it sticks. If it doesn't, it doesn't. We'll find out in another month or two. If I were trying to fix the sales of comics at a publishing company, Marvel or DC, because again, shared universe, they're operating on one business model, which is different than, say, Image or smaller publishers or whatever, for the most part. I would treat the sales problem as, I don't say an editorial problem, but certainly a content problem. And I would have tried to gear something like the button as, again, an entry ramp that hooks people and says, oh, I should follow this title more.
Yeah.
Easy to say, hard to do. I get that. But if whoever figures out reader retention, and even it doesn't have to be perfect reader retention, but if they're just leaking a few dozen units versus a few thousand or whatever, a few hundred every issue, that's a huge competitive advantage.
Yes. 'Cause
then you've got more stable footing on which to build your sales. Let's talk about the number two item of the list. This is another Marvel one, second best-selling thing, depending how you look at it. Venom number 150. Drew and I reviewed this. This did 141,757 units. That's up 125.92% from the previous issue, which did, 62,747 units? Which, if you will recall, I believe we talked about last time as having done about roughly twice as well as the fifth, because that was issue six was the previous one. They can't count six to 150. It's obvious. I mean, but issue five, which was the previous one versus what negative 146 that you would think if you were just jumping by 150s or whatever it was. It did 32,088 units. So huge bump on number six, another huge bump on number 150. And of course, the way they did this is we talked a little last time about not only did they have a major story point in number six, they also had a 1 in 1,000 variant. Well, to make sure issue 150 sold well, they had a regular version, gee, go figure. Although they don't always have that, but they did this time. They had a meter exceed 200% of Venom number 4 with the orders of the regular cover of Venom 150, and you could order all you want of that. For reference, issue number 4 of Venom did 38,337 units.
At least it was a low threshold.
Yeah. But then issue 150 had two 1 in 25 variants, a 1 in 100 variant, a 1 in 500 variant, a 1 in 1,000 variant, and a 1 in 2,000 variant. All of which were the bargain price of $5.99. So, I mean, there are Venom fans out there, certainly, obviously. There are people who like to chase the variant covers and stuff. I was going to say I get that, but honestly, there comes a point where I just don't. When you get to the 1 in 1,000, 1 in 200, or 1 in 2,000 or whatever, it's, I mean, come on. If people like to do it, that's great. It floats their boat. That's cool. I just don't understand it from are you going to recoup your money from like a financial perspective, or even frankly, personally an aesthetic collection, because I'll get a variant cover if it's just a cool cover. But if it's just like a sketch variant cover or something like that, there comes a point where is it really worth that kind of a markup? And personally for me, it is not, but I tend to be a little bit of a cheapskate in that regard. That's how I can afford as many books as I do, is I don't pay a whole lot for any one of them. But this is one of those things that come next month when we get, I presume, Venom 151, if they're going with the legacy numbering or whatever. Or maybe it's Venom 8. I don't know. Or maybe it's Venom 342, if they're just picking numbers at random at this point. We are going to see that title plummet. I expect it to be potentially as low as 30,000 or under, possibly as good as maybe 40, 50,000 if it's lucky, but I mean, they've got the Edge of Venomverse coming up to help boost the sales or whatever on this stuff. I don't think that's going to be successful. I'm expecting to see a pretty massive drop on this on the next year.
Yeah, you and Drew reviewed that book, too, and as I remember, neither of you were particularly thrilled with it.
Yeah, it had a couple of different stories in it. The lead was all right. The second feature, one of them explained kind of how they had distanced themselves from the previous volume that had ended a few weeks earlier or whatever, and it just was fairly perfunctory and unsatisfying. And then they had another one set back in the heyday of Venom back in the 90s or whatever, and it wasn't totally clear that was the case. It just seemed to be a mishmash of stuff. And it may be exactly what a lot of people were looking for, it just wasn't what I was looking for. I suspect more of the bump here was, again, the crazy variants.
Yeah, it's interesting. The one you said set back in the heyday, 90s, whatever you want to call it. Listening to your descriptions of that, I almost wanted to go buy it, but not for $6.
Well, yeah. I mean, with that kind of a price point, if you get somebody who is intrigued, are they going to be so intrigued by it that they'll cough up that kind of cash for it? And at $2.99, comics, I don't think, are the disposable income, whimsical buy that they used to be at, you know, 75 cents or 35 cents or whatever. But at $5.99, that's where you're starting to say, it's like, I could do that, or I can go have a cheap meal at a fast food place or something. It just...
Go to a matinee.
Yeah, buy a movie that's discounted or whatever on DVD or something. I mean, you've got other things that will give you more story, more satisfaction, more entertainment, whatever. I mean, even if you were to spend the $6 if you could find a video arcade these days and put the quarters in, you'd still probably be entertained a lot longer. It's just comics are having a hard time on that return on investment sort of a thing. And that's just it's a problem. I did pull up the next issue of Venom's solicits, or at least the retailer order form stuff. It has a meet or exceed 90% of orders for Venom of the regular... hang on. Okay, Venom 151, this is confusing to me. I hope I am misreading this, because it's got a regular cover and another one, a Matina Mary Jane variant. Meet or exceed 90% of orders for Venom 5 with orders of Black Bolt 2 regular cover, and this order this variant all you want.
So you have to exceed your orders of Venom number 5. No, you got to do 90% on a Black Bolt book, which I'm assuming is on the same order form.
I'm assuming this is a typo.
Is the Black Bolt item on that order form?
It's two items below it on the list. Yes, it is on the order form.
So it is entirely possible they're saying, hey, if you want this variant, you got to buy Black Bolt.
It's possible, but that seems unlikely.
Well, because we have seen that before, where you had to exceed orders of something that had nothing to do with the book it was for.
All right, this is on page 39 of the Marvel previews, which I have just reached over and grabbed. Because everybody has their Marvel previews handy, correct? And I've got the wrong month's Marvel previews. I have the current month's. This is a month or two back. I'd have to go elsewhere to go get it. So much for that theory.
We will have to check in with some of our friends that are resellers and look into it. And maybe we can talk about it next month. That odd thing.
I'm willing to bet it is more likely to be a mistake. But there is the possibility is indeed what they intended. It just seems... Oops.
It seems genius.
Sarcastically or seriously?
Both. Sarcastically, yes. From a pure PR guy side, it seems genius.
I mean, I could see order more of this than some. I mean, the thing is, there's also a Black Bolt 2 has a variant that has order 125% more of.
More of?
Well, hang on. Meet or exceed 125% of orders for IVX number 5, which is a December 16 order code, with orders of Black Bolt number 2, regular cover, and order this variant all you want.
Okay.
So they've got two different things that they're trying to boost the orders of Black Bolt 2 on. That seems like an odd choice to get the benefit of it.
But, okay, so it's kind of like the idea of the crossover, but it's done for the resellers instead of the consumer. When you do a crossover with, you know, Iron Man and, you know, Sunspot, you're doing it, in theory, to get people to check out Sunspot.
Yeah, but why would you take a Spider Office book and promote an Inhumans Office book?
Again, you're taking, in theory, the number 2 book on the list and trying to use it to promote a book that may be significantly farther down the list.
All right, hang on. Do we have Black Bolt number 1 on here?
I don't think so.
Yes, we do. Hang on.
Oh, we do. There it is. Black Bolt. Yeah, hang on. 36,332.
Yeah, down at rank 57. Yeah.
So, yes, using the book that sold 150,000 to promote the book that sold 36,000 makes sense. Like I said, it's just they've realized it doesn't work on the readers, so now they're going to use that tactic on the resellers.
If it was intentional, it may or may not be. I'm not saying it's not.
It may or may not.
Again, when I go through, particularly the Marvel solicits and look at these variants and stuff, I invariably have a couple of brain cells that just kind of go pop and vanish from my brain. Because there are a couple of these things that I've got to stop and figure out, no, wait, what is this doing again? My hat is off to the retailer community, because trying to figure out what's the interest of this stuff going to be a few months out is hard. I think it's a very mercurial audience. I think it's a very jaded audience in a couple of cases, particularly with the Marvel fans, and deservedly so. And then you factor in all of the crazy promotional things they've got. It's rare to find an item in the Marvel solicits, it's not impossible, but it's the minority, that doesn't have a variant cover or an alternate cover or something. And there, it's more common to find, let me rephrase that, I think it is more common to find items that have multiple variants than it is to find items that have no variants.
What I can't figure out, and I gotta wonder if Marvel or DC or whoever, but since Marvel's the most involved in this, I think they'd be the first ones to figure it out. At what point does it benefit everybody to stop with the 1 in 1,000 and just say, there will be a version of this book at $1,000 cover price. Order it if you want it.
I would prefer that, actually. I don't think they'll go that way, because if they had done that, say, for Venom, then issue 150 sales would be way further down the list.
What would profits be down? Do you do better
profits
selling?
Profits might be up.
That's the thing. Do you do better selling a couple of $1,005 books or 5 or 6 $2,000-$3,000 books?
The challenge in terms of even guessing as to what's more profitable, obviously you would have fewer items to print, but since you're printing fewer items, would that impact your cost of printing? I would think at Marvel and DC they've got enough volume that it really isn't going to make that big of a difference, and that they therefore would be better off doing kind of the boutique, you know, literally there's a dozen copies of this max or whatever the
oh.
They'd have to cap the orders on those.
Why?
For
they don't cap them currently.
Well, they do in so much as only a certain number of stores are going to be able to get like the 1 in 1,000, 1 in 2,000 variants.
Well, but the only reason as a store, the number of stores that order the 1 in 1,000, because they legitimately have 1,000 customers that want the book, and it's a free bonus to, is minuscule. It's 1 or 2 stores, maybe.
A top, it's a half dozen, if that doesn't. Absolute tops, and that's crazy insane tops.
Okay.
Agreed.
So, the other store that does it on the premise that they can sell that book at a huge markup to someone who wants that book, right?
Yes. Are you then suggesting that
Marvel bypass the middleman and just say, if stores are going to sell this for $3,000, why make the stores order 2,000 books they're going to throw away and just sell the book at $3,000?
With the same discount, etc., so they still get the markup or percentage.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. It certainly seems a lot less wasteful.
Doesn't it?
Certainly a lot easier on everybody involved, because you're moving a lot less stuff that's, once it gets to the store, not going to move.
Now, this goes back to something we talked about the last few months. Do people at the publishers care about the numbers we're talking about? And again, the big disadvantage to the system I'm suggesting is that doesn't affect this list, and that Venom is not anywhere near number two anymore. For all the crying about how, those numbers are wrong and all that, it's amazing how many of them, they do a lot of things to manipulate being higher on the list.
Take a look at rank 26 for a moment.
Yep.
All New Guardians of the Galaxy, number two. It's a $399 book. It did 51,830 units, down 37.13% from the first issue, which is at rank number nine with 82,439 units.
We discussed the mythical 80,000 book, yes.
Yes. But if you go back to that second issue there at rank 26, and you look at the retail rank, it's 73.
Yes.
If you filter the list by price to $399, which is, frankly, 247 of the 339 items I have, because I've got stuff that's below the thing.
It's most of the list.
Yeah, it's the majority of the list. And a retail rank of 73, sandwiched between an item above of 19 and below of 20 for a retail rank, this thing sold,
this thing should be somewhere around
29,660 between ranks 81 and 82, maybe?
Somewhere in there. I got it more between 79 or 78 and 80, around 30,600, but yes.
Well, if it did retail rank 73, I would put it between retail rank 72 and 74, which are ranks 81 and 82.
Yes, but okay. But you've got retail rank 65 in there and 70. There's a few other books that do some wonky things.
Fair point.
The other one being Luke Cage, number one. At rank 66 with a retail rank of 83.
I'm willing to... Yeah, you're right. Those two items could have been offset.
Yeah, there's some other Marvel number ones that do some wonky things with retail rank.
But, yeah, I mean, you look at Rocket, number one, down at rank 90. Its retail rank's a little out of whack.
Yep.
So, to your point of... in Luke Cage, number one... Does Marvel do things to seemingly goose the numbers as to where things are? Also for Generation X, number one?
Yep.
Absolutely. It's just to what degree they do it.
It's a great... They're doing all these things to fix the numbers, and then Brevoort will scream that the numbers are all wrong and don't mean anything. Well, why are you trying to fix them if they are meaningless?
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's... And I'm not saying they're doing it solely to reposition this list. There is value in overshipping to a degree and getting more stuff out there, hit a saturation point, etc. But there is zero evidence that I can point to, and maybe I'm just not seeing it, that that's actually a successful tactic to increase sales.
Well, there's one man who probably truly knows.
Who?
Bob Harris, who's not telling.
I don't know how much visibility the people at Marvel and DC have. I would hope they have extreme visibility since Diamond's a sales agent for them. But they know how much they print. They certainly know how much goes to Diamond. I would hope they know how much goes through Diamond and out.
Well, but my point is, a few years ago, we were talking about this before, the DC tried this. And wasn't Bob Harris in charge of it at the time?
That was Bob Wayne.
Bob Wayne. I'm sorry. You're right. It was Bob Wayne. Not Bob. You're right. Bob's been at Marvel. You're right. Anyways, it was Bob Wayne who messed around with it. And when kind of asked these questions, his essential response was, hey, I did the research with my money. If you want the numbers, you do the research with your money.
Yep. Perfectly good answer. I mean,
absolutely.
I would have liked more information.
Perfectly legitimate answer.
But I certainly do not fault him for having that response to it. And frankly, I applaud him for doing that kind of experiment, seeing how it works. And I would argue he is probably one of the more knowledgeable people on the planet about how sales trends, at least during that time frame, were working.
Yes.
I do think there have been shifts even just in the few years since then. He hadn't been gone that long. It's been 2 years?
Something like that.
Something like that. I'm surprised he hasn't popped up at another publisher. If I were running a publisher and thought could afford and he'd be willing or whatever, Bob Wayne is certainly somebody I would consider having on the team just for his wealth of knowledge as to how the industry works, what doesn't. Whether that would necessarily translate well outside of DC or not, don't know. Not saying it wouldn't, just I don't know. And also just the way the market has fluctuated since.
Yeah.
again, to the point where, you know, a major Marvel event tie-in doesn't seem to mean anything much these days. It's a constantly evolving industry. And, you know, when I see so many things where Marvel seems to be overshipping and I'm not even sure with what hope they have. Because I don't know that there's a problem with retailer shelves being suspiciously vacant in the areas where one might find a Guardians of the Galaxy book or some such. Certainly, I think a publisher putting their money where their mouth is and stuff like that and supporting their books, I'm all for. But do it smart, not just, you know, ship another 10% or 50% or whatever they may have done.
Yeah.
What else?
I think we should take a moment to talk about ranks 7 and 9 or 7 and 10.
Already talked a little about 7, which is Batman.
Yeah, Batman 23 at 96,542. Below 100,000, but still arguably the best ongoing normal book sales-wise.
Yes. Well, and the one of the other ones that's best ongoing is down at rank 15, which is All-Star Batman number 10, 66,018 units. It's down a little. Those are the two things that are the strong sellers for DC.
For DC. And that's why I wanted to bring in rank number 10.
Rank number 10,
Walking
yes.
Walking Dead, number 167, 74,062. Essentially the second best-selling regular issue on this list.
I don't think we are that far. Again, it may be a year, it may not be, maybe two, maybe sooner. But I don't think we're that far from Walking Dead potentially being the best-selling ongoing comic.
Or a regular issue, yes. Non-number one, non-shenanigan issue.
It's hard to count a number one as an ongoing comic when it's just had the one or maybe the zero issue. But to me, yeah, ongoing concern out of the honeymoon period.
And clearly, at this point, it's Batman, Walking Dead, All-Star Batman, and then Flash 22 at rank 17.
Which, that's the button.
So then the Detective 956 and 957.
But
that ranks 19 and 20.
Let's go with Walking Dead number at rank 10 and work our way up for just a second. All New Guardians of the Galaxy number 1, we already talked about the second issue having dropped 37% down to 51,000 at rank 26.
No.
That's out. Then we've got Secret Empire. That's an event thing. Give it another.
And look at where its first two. Look at the drops on its first couple issues. It could be below this by the next issue.
Certainly by the end of next month. Certainly, absolutely could be.
Yep.
And even if it's not, it's only going to issue 10 or 12 or 18, whenever they decide to end the event.
Yep.
So it's a short term thing. Then we've got Batman. So, okay, Batman's above it. That's the competition Walking Dead is going after. And then you've got, again, Secret Empire. Above that, we've got a one-shot for Guardians of the Galaxy, which is here and gone. We've got Flash and Batman, the lenticular editions for the button. Okay, let's take those out because they're not ongoing concerns. First item was Secret Empire, leaving us Venom, which I think we're both in agreement. Number 151 is not going to be doing 75,000. It's not going to be doing above 70,000.
Yeah.
You know, so in terms of ongoing concerns, Walking Dead is competing against Batman.
Yeah.
And Batman is faltering. It's not plummeting or anything, but at the rate it's kind of getting chipped away at, and how Walking Dead has that unique kind of upward trend, I need to do a chart to figure out where those two lines cross.
Yeah.
Because at some point they will.
And to be fair, this was a particularly strong issue of Walking Dead. 167 was up 8.5%, up about 5,800 units. It was a particularly strong showing for the Walking Dead. But again, there's nothing crazy that we can see anyways that accounts for that.
Well, and you know, to me, it's a strong showing of Walking Dead. It's like, well, yeah, but that's not unusual. You know, it's not like it's a sudden spike in sales like we've gotten on Venom or some of these other things.
But it's not the 25-cent issue. It's not the 100 issue that had a million covers. It's just kind of the next issue.
Yes. And to me, that's what gives Walking Dead kind of its edge, is it doesn't have, aside from some of the cover gimmicks, really those kinds of spikes in sales that a lot of other titles get. When either they get a new creative team or they get some crazy crossover or some, you know what I mean? It's going up the charts by earning its position.
Do you want to talk about some of these Marvel number ones kind of sitting in here, the next few positions on the list?
Oh, sure, why not? Let me filter the list to the Marvel number ones. Working our way down from number 10, we've got Jean Grey, number one. Frankly, I expect to be a short-run sort of a title. Not necessarily, you know, done in six issues, but I don't know that she needs her own book in addition to leading, I guess it's X-Men Blue. I'm expecting that one to it's a Marvel first issue. I expect that to drop in sales. And it did, 70,702 units. So it's
good enough for rank 13.
Yeah. It's respectable. It's something that feels more like a mid-30,000s book, but that's just kind of a gut feeling. Next to Star Wars Screaming Citadel, that's part of a crossover between Dr. Aphra and the regular Star Wars title. So it's a one-shot. It did 69,019 units. Then we've got Cable number one at rank 16, 60,845 units. Not sure where this one's going to go. It may hit enough of this nostalgia stuff. It may benefit a little from the character having been tightly connected to Deadpool over the years. Feels like it's selling more than it certainly will over time. I'd have to go see if it or Jean Grey had a crazy number of variants and such. But it's going to go down. I just don't know if it'll plummet. Generation X is one of those that we've already talked about where they seem to be overshipping a little bit. Its first issue did 45,028 units. It's an X book. There are too many. I think it's just as simple as that.
Now comes the interesting one, I think. These all are either overshipped or other weird things are going on with them, and they're not all that great for number ones.
And we're limiting to just Marvel, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking Black Bolt, Luke Cage, I Am Groot, and Rocket, really.
Yeah, and the decision to do a Black Bolt title with and the Royals simultaneously is a little odd. We had, on Rocket, we had variant covers, 3 1 in 15s, a 1 in 25, and then a meet or exceed 175% of Guardians of the Galaxy number 17 for the regular cover Order All You Want variant.
All of which earned them the whopping rank of 90 at 27,750 units, essentially.
Yeah. And then, we also had I Am Groot, which is above it at rank 71.
Yep.
A 1 in 10, a 1 in 25, 2 1 in 50s, 2 different covers for meet or exceed 175% of Guardians of the Galaxy number 17, order as many as you want.
Which, again, got it all the way up to rank 71 and 32,260 issues.
Yeah.
And then Luke Cage, which again appears to have some overshipping issues, as did I Am Groot, to be fair.
Yeah.
At rank 66, getting to 34,132. So not some of Marvel's strongest first issues.
If you filter the list to The Guardians of the Galaxy, Mother Entropy is the title,
okay,
and then release the filter on the issue number, you will see all 5 issues of that came out weekly. All of these were on the March 2017 previews. The title started at 22,079 units, lost, 18.36% on the second issue, another 5.3% on the next issue, only 0.2% on the fourth issue, and then another 5.88% on the final issue. The fact that 3 and 4 are neck and neck is a little puzzling to me.
Yes, but let's, again, that got it all the way from 22,000 down to 16,000. And that was the third Guardians of the Galaxy book, plus virtually all of them have solo titles this month.
And part of why the first issue sold better is it had a regular cover and a 1 in 25 cover.
Yeah, and none of the rest of them did it. At least I will say that. No other variant covers for any of the other issues.
Yeah. But $3.99 weekly, in addition to having all the other Guardians of the Galaxy solo titles, team titles, etc., I mean, that's $19.95 for this.
That's a $20 trade for, yeah.
So I don't know if this is really working well for Marvel or not. I know there are a lot of people who, when they see this sort of a thing in previews, steer clear of it because, again, they're, to say it's in the honeymoon period is understating it. It's from an ordering perspective, the equivalent, I guess, of like a one-night stand or something. You don't have, I mean, you've got the final order cutoff time, but if that could help on that fifth issue, maybe, and maybe that's why it dropped the way it did, I don't know.
Again, this begs the question, why not do a $15 trade paperback, OGN?
Because they could double dip.
Because that's right, because they're going to do that anyways.
Yep. I would love to hear thoughts from the listeners and such on if you were publishing. I mean, would you do this straight to trade? Why would you do it? What do you think is the better business model? Now, I want to be clear, business model on that, not, oh, I think they should do this because, well, I would like that. That's fine and good. I get it. We're readers. We have preferences. I'd have liked that to be, you know, $1.99 a piece, but there's no business reason for that. Because
well,
it's,
they might sell it.
Well, true. There is that, but would they make enough money to do it? I mean, if you look at the sales on this, they're not making money hand over fist on this.
Well, that's the thing. If it was $1.99, would you double sell?
No. To me, price is one of those things that as it goes up, sales go down. But as price goes down, sales do not go up.
I agree with that. I have noticed that for several years and can't figure out why.
I think the price point is, it's funny because it places a value on the property, on the material. And if it's too low, it devalues the material. Well, it must not be worth anything if they're practically giving it away. If it's too high, it's like, well, it's not worth that. And there's a sweet spot in the middle. Now, for DC, they seem to have considered $2.99 that point. Marvel, clearly, $3.99 and increasingly $4.99, I think. It's just a matter of how much do we feel this stuff is worth.
Which leads back to another interesting question. The book we were just talking about, that's one of the best ongoing concerns, is always been a $2.99 book. And has done crazy things like 99 cent issues.
Walking Dead?
Yes.
Did it do a 99 cent? It did a 25 cent.
Yeah, 25 cent. Okay, so even lower.
But to me, there's a difference. 99, you're at least covering the price of printing, I would imagine. Certainly hope. 25 cents, you're not.
Okay. My point is, they've done an occasional promotionally priced item. I think they did something else one other time with a promotional price. I don't remember exactly what it was. Seems like they did, though, 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
And then you also got the fact that it is permanently a $2.99 book. As everyone else has gone to $3.99, and we've seen $4 and $5.99, Walking Dead has remained $2.99 the entire time.
I certainly think the price point helps it. I can think of one or two other examples where creators have done what I consider to be, I don't want to say questionable, but amazing things with their price point. Let's go with that because I thought it was good. Actually, it wasn't always $2.99. It started at $2.95, but your point remains under $3. The example, though, I was thinking of was Love and Capes, where Tom Zoller had that coming out quarterly, and at least one, if not 2 years running, the issue that came out in time for Free Comic Book Day was the Free Comic Book Day version, and it was free.
Yes, I do remember that.
And I'm like, I don't know how he made that work, but that's what got me on the book, frankly. Oh, it's free. I'll pick it up. Oh, wow. I love this. So it's just a matter of, you know, how can you make the kind of the price point do what you need it to in terms of bringing in the money you need, yet be low enough to entice people to read the book. And I certainly think price is a major factor. But if you look at the list, I mean, if we filter it to the $2.99 stuff, or actually, let's include all the stuff below that, too, because there are a few of those. No, I guess most of them are in the top 100. I was going to see if they were kind of evenly dispersed.
Well, but the problem is the stuff in the bottom 100 simply doesn't. The stuff in the bottom 100 doesn't tend to be the Marvel and DC stuff, and none of those publishers do cheaper books, except Dark Horse, which does do the occasional 350 issue.
Well, I guess my point was more that just being cheaper doesn't guarantee success.
No, it certainly doesn't.
It's a matter a best example of that is at rank 190, which is Invincible number 136.
Exactly.
It's by Kirkman, so if that's the secret sauce, it should be doing better. It launched at the same time as Walking Dead, so if that was the secret sauce, it should be doing better. It's a superhero book. It's $2.99. So I mean, it's there's so many factors.
Yeah.
It does worry me when I see 219 items at that $3.99 price point, less than 50 items at $2.99, because it the entry point for comics. If it's a $3.99 entry fee to even sample it to see if the 20 page story is worth your while, man, that's a hard sell.
Yeah.
And that's in an era, as we've talked about before, where the property of these things is spawning movie after movie after movie, TV show after TV show after TV show, Netflix stuff, video games, cartoons. People are considering themselves, quote unquote, comic book fans, showing up to work wearing the attire, and in some cases, don't read the books. It's just we've gotten the mass audience as primed for the comic books as we, I think, could possibly hope to get them, and we still can't seem to convert them to readers.
How much of that's price point and all that stuff, and how much of it is, I almost want to say, a culture of people that don't read anymore? I mean, books, prose, novels, nonfiction, magazines, all these industries are having these problems.
We're very much not a reader culture, and I agree. I do think that is the problem.
Well, I don't know if that's the problem, but it certainly is one of the factors.
I think it's, I mean, the people are busy. There've been video games for 20 years or something. So it's not like these are new factors or whatever. But it's just the material doesn't seem to be competing well. And
but again, as you point out, the movies and the video games compete better in their markets than the comics do. But again, the question is the factor that makes the comics not appealing the actual fact that you have to read it or something else?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. The fact that you have to read it, I think, is certainly a major part of it. As to whether it's the major part, I don't know. The fact that it's hard to get a hold of, you've either got to go out of your way to go to a comic store or, you know, Comixology, find it online.
Or have an Amazon account.
Yeah.
Most people do.
You've got to go out of your way. You've got to show initiative to go seek it out, though.
Okay.
I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. TV, you come home, you sit down, you click a button on your remote, and whatever's in front of you, if you don't like it, you click next, 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 and you find something. Comics aren't that ubiquitous.
Fair enough.
So I think there's that. But it does seem like the societal acceptance of this material is high enough that, frankly, things should be doing a little better.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that did do well that I want to point out, if you filter your list by column Y for the letters LAZ to get to the Lazarus contract, we've got the four parts of that, which in, let me see if I can get the right order on this. Let's see. Part one was in Titans number 11, which is at rank 33, 45,889 units. Continued into part two, which was in Teen Titans number 8, 43,385 units. So down, we'll say 2,500 units. The third part was over in Deathstroke number 19. It did 34,722 units. So we'll say that's down 9,000-ish. And then the finale was in the Teen Titans Lazarus Contract Special number 1, which was at 38,217, which is actually up, we'll say, 3,500 units or so. These issues that tied into this of Titans, Teen Titans, and Deathstroke all went up. 12.22% for Titans, 20.33% for Teen Titans, and 52.9% for Deathstroke.
And Deathstroke, the worst on the list, is at rank 61.
Yeah.
62.
It's interesting that the third part sold less than the ones that had Titans in the name.
Yes.
I read this. I enjoyed it, but I was also really kind of miffed by the continuity implications of this.
They screwed up the great story, greatest Titan story ever.
Well, they took the Judas contract and firmly kicked it out of continuity in a fairly subtle manner.
Exactly. Like I said, they got rid of the greatest Titan story ever.
And I don't understand this, given that the video version of it finally came out a month ago. I still haven't watched it yet, but I'd been waiting for the Judas Contract animated thing to come out for ages.
Okay. It's not great. More importantly, they just put the trade paperback back in print.
This should have been something that didn't nullify the Judas Contract, but would have sat right next to it on the shelf.
Okay, yeah.
Has been, I don't say as a bookend to it or a match setter, you know what I mean. Something that was the Judas Contract of our era versus that era.
Yeah.
And while they did some interesting stuff having the teams meet, it was too early in the run of some of these books to do it. And, again, throwing things out of continuity was problematic. And one of the changes, one of the characters, the way he's changed coming out of it, really seem to undercut a lot of what they're doing with Rebirth. Not so much in this, but in the following issue of the book of Titans,
which
actually.
Which character are you thinking?
Wally of Titans, not Teen Titans.
Okay.
Particularly issue 12 of Titans I read. They're like, wow, they're going this way, but I thought what they'd set up was going this other direction.
Yeah.
So there are times I just don't know where they're going, but to see, a bump because of a storyline. This is exactly what we were missing with Secret Empire. Let's see, what else do we got?
Let's look at some of the non-Marvel DC. We've done an awful lot of that the last few months.
Yeah, but, I mean, they sell most of the books.
That is fair.
But, yes, let's take them out. We've talked Walking Dead already.
Yes.
74,062 units. So if we take that out as well, we're now down at the highest 30, selling...
30,000.
30,632 with 7 to Eternity number 6. Everything else is 30,000 or below.
And you got about 5 or 6 to your under 20,000. Yeah, maybe more like 10.
Top selling item from Boom Studios is at rank 148, and that's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 15. It sold 16,133 units, down 4 copies from the previous issue.
14, wasn't it? No, 4. You're right. Never mind.
Previous issue was number 14.
Yeah.
At some point, I'll change the columns to make this not so confusing.
So it got lost in a rounding error.
Potentially, yeah.
It's down a rounding error.
I mean, to me, this thing's pretty much leveled off.
Yep, absolutely.
As the top-selling thing for the month for Boom. So I don't think they're unhappy with this. I don't think they should be unhappy with this. I am hoping this opens the door, in addition to the Go-Go Power Rangers either series or miniseries they're doing, for them to explore the other parts of the franchise. And I'm going to try to talk to them at Comic-Con to see what their plans are on this and whatnot, or at least what their thoughts are, because they may not have concrete plans. Because as a fan of Power Rangers, I would like to see them do more with the franchise. As a fan of Power Rangers, I don't want to see them do everything in the franchise all at once. You know, I don't want them to hit the point like I think Titan is teetering on with Doctor Who, where they have ongoing titles for the 12th, 11th, 10th, and 9th Doctors, Torchwood, and maybe one or two other things. They've got so much in play there that it's a little much, and I don't want them to oversaturate Power Rangers, but I do want them to get beyond Mighty Morphin. And I don't know where their mind is at or even what I would necessarily suggest to them. But I'd like to see more.
Have you seen the feature film?
I have not. I have ordered it on Blu-ray, and it's likely to jump to the front of the list of watching stuff when I get it. I just haven't made it out to the theater in a while.
Fair enough. I'm sure we'll get an episode once that happens.
Yes. There is a backlog of items... both to watch and a number of things that have been watched, even recorded on, some of which even edited, but I haven't actually gotten out yet. Because again, I stick to only 3 episodes a week because I'm not insane. Well, I'm not completely insane. I think there's arguments to be made. But absolutely, there'll be an episode on Power Rangers once my sister and I have seen it. We have Logan, but have not watched it. We've got a few other things. It's finding the time.
May I suggest Lego Batman go near the top of that list?
That is physically at the top of the list at the moment. The challenge we're hitting is when we do stuff on a Wednesday or Friday night, finding the right length thing to watch and then record on.
It's relatively short.
It's like 2 hours, so it's definitely in there. We're just in the middle of marathoning a series that
Oh, okay.
we'll take the next slot we've got, and we've had a few other things going on that kind of have impacted how many viewing times we've got. And of course, with Comic-Con coming up, that'll impact things somehow. I don't know how.
Yeah, that is also true.
But there's also 4th of July. There's, Lego Batman, Logan, certainly Power Rangers. Oh, there's a ton of it. I think the solution for this is for everybody to just send me tons of money so I can gainfully retire and spend nothing but time watching TV and reading comics and then, rambling about it on a podcast. I'm certain that will happen. That's how delusional I am. But again, that goes back to how many things in comics have a mass media kind of a tie-in or something, and just how widely accepted this stuff is. It's crazy.
Yep.
The other thing that I found very interesting is if you filter the list here to IDW, not only are they in general doing pretty well, but a lot of the stuff they're doing it with just shows how well they play with others. Because we've got Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures as their top-selling item at 23,210 units. Third best-selling item is the Planet of the Apes Green Lantern number 4, 13,097 units. Followed by the Star Trek Green Lantern Stranger's World final issue of that miniseries, which implies there will be yet another, which I'm really hoping.
Another one that's virtually flat of 2 units.
Yeah, but again, it seems to have hit its level. And the Turtles one was actually up a little bit on its final issue.
Yes.
So, I mean, they're showing that they can play well with the other publishers. I really like the crossovers they're doing with DC seem to be working. I'd like to see more of the same. You know, I think they've got some other things that would be fun for them to do. Maybe a Back to the Future crossover with Booster Gold, Rip Hunter, or some time traveler over at DC, or whatever, could be fun. If they could play nice with Titan Comics, a Doctor Who Back to the Future thing could be a blast. But
as long as they don't do another Hasbro crossover.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's where I think IDW is faltering a little bit, and I don't know whose decision it really was to say, hey, let's take all the Hasbro stuff, put it into the same universe. That was questionable enough. But the way they're kind of, I don't say cross-pollinating, but mixing the properties a little bit. I don't need a Transformer in my G.I. Joe comic or in my Action Man comic or whatever, or in my
ROM. I was going to say, it's the Action Man and the ROM and some of the other Transformers, G.I. Joe, I don't get either. But I accept that pretty much since the start of those properties, people have wanted that crossover.
Exactly. It's like 40 years too late to complain about that one, I guess. I get it.
But all the rest of them? Oh, gee. It's just, yeah.
I've backed out of the Hasbro line because of the shared universe. Not the shared universe, but the
bad crossovers.
Well, your chocolate's in my peanut butter kind of a thing.
I'm G.I. Joe only, and only the original one at this point.
The Real American Hero one? So it's not even part of the Hasbro universe then?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Part of the old Marvel universe.
It's not that they're doing bad things, it's the stories they're choosing to tell I don't agree with, and seeing that these are lower on the list and continuing to sink in many regards, standard attrition, it's not like they're plummeting. I mean, ROM was down, though, 6.39%. Let's see, G.I. Joe, only about 3.22%.
The Turtles, though, issue 69 was up 4%.
Mm-hmm.
They
seem to be doing well with the Turtle stuff, too.
Well, you know, you've got the creator that still wants to be doing them. How can you go wrong?
Yeah. That's another one. If they could do a crossover with Boom, I'd like to see the Turtles and the Power Rangers. Just, you know, a nod to the crossover they did in the shows.
The film?
Not so much the film, but in
Power
Rangers.
That's right,
Rangers,
it was a live-action show.
Yeah. But again, I like it when the publishers can kind of play nice and tell some stories that are just fun. I'm actually kind of enjoying, like, the Star Trek Green Lantern and the Green Lantern Planet of the Apes stuff as much or more than the regular Green Lantern stuff. It's just, it's fun, it's well done, and they treat both franchises with the respect they're due. What else do we have if we look, let's take IDW out of the mix as well as...
Yeah, I was going to say, before we take IDW out, the other thing that they seem to be doing okay with, but man, I don't get, is the Funko universe.
Yeah, that, I don't get that one either.
Okay, what else do we got here? Hey, how about that? Rank 143, issue 273 of Spawn continuing to rise. There really is a Spawn resurgence of sorts going on the last 10 issues or so.
Yes and no, 266, let's see, that was up to 22,304. Yeah, otherwise, well, we've been in the 15 to 18,000 range for a bit.
Yep.
But still, not something to you know, really, I would say since 250.
Yep, and it comes out. It's been consistent. It's been on the shelf, which you haven't been able to say for, you know, pretty much its entire life.
So do we think McFarlane just got serious about it again, or what are we thinking?
I have no idea. I don't care, other than it's entertaining, it's fun to read, and it shows up every month.
Can't ask for more than that.
Exactly. And the art is still phenomenal, as it always has been.
Well, and 25 years into to Image, this is really the only thing I would consider kind of still ongoing.
It's the, well...
You could argue Savage Dragon, but it's so infrequent.
Eric Morris does a Savage Dragon occasionally.
But if you also look at rank 111, we've got the 25th anniversary director's cut of Spawn number 1.
Yep.
At 23,672 units.
Which was actually an interesting book.
So, I mean, it's Spawn's, the fact it's still doing as well as it is. It's funny, because I can remember back when I was speculating that Walking Dead would overtake Spawn.
It did.
It most definitely did. By, what, 50,000 units more or so now?
It's only 10 years.
Yeah.
Let's see if it's still there in another 15 years.
That's actually a great question. In another 15 years, how many of these things are even likely to still be around in any way, shape, or form? Will they have reverted to lower numbers, meaning they've got to go negative on some of these things? And will we have, like, Walking Dead and Spawn still going? Really, it comes down to how long do those creators live? 'Cause...
Yeah, and I was sad to see that. I understand it, but I was sad to see that Invincible he's giving up.
I wouldn't phrase it so much as giving up, but retiring the title.
Okay.
He's given it more than enough time. He's given it more than enough effort. It's doing okay.
Yep.
But it's not the best use of his time. No. I would rather he stop that title and either focus more on Walking Dead or other titles that could be of that caliber. And don't get me wrong, I've loved Invincible. It's had some brilliant issues. It's also had a couple of issues that were just kind of there. Granted, frankly, I'd say the same thing about Walking Dead, to be honest. I don't blame him or begrudge him ending Invincible. But it is a shame to have one of the other long-running titles on the list going away. What else do we have in here that looks interesting? Dying on the Dead came back, but it's been so long since that previous issue came back that, while my system could indeed find it for the sales history stuff, it didn't do it for the comparison. And frankly, you know, I wasn't too worked up about that. I did pick this up. I also will admit to picking up the collection of the three issues preceding it, because I was too lazy to go dig them out of my my back issue bins. So there's that. Haven't read them yet, but I've got them.
Well, hey, you know, they made the sale. That's all they care about.
At least there were three issues for them to collect when it's just like one or two or something. Yeah. I get kind of annoyed by that. And it's the kind of thing, if there's another lengthy delay, I'm done with the book. I don't care what I think of it. I can't stay on books that have that kind of gap between release. The one exception I will make, simply so I can continue to kind of poke fun at it, is Non-Player. But I don't expect it to come out more than once every other year or something, if that.
Once every other year? Isn't it like twice a decade?
Well, it's twice so far. Ever.
And that's over 4.5 years, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And when he got the second issue out, he said he had a plan to finish it, I think, by the 6-issue series by 2020. I'm like, that kills story momentum. You have got to have not only a brilliant story, which he may or may not have, but something that is so memorable and so accessible that when you open the next issue 3 years later or whenever, you're instantly back in the story. And
or you just wait, put out the OGN.
I think with that kind of release schedule, you have to. You are obligated to do that. It is unfair to the readers and retailers to expect them to accept a serialized story over that kind of delay.
Speaking of long-lived titles, Simpsons 239 still on the list.
Mm-hmm.
At 5,600 plus units, ranked 291.
Yeah. Bongo again doing what they do and continues to work for them. That they will be able to do that pretty much. Well, I would say as long as they want to, but I'm curious what will happen with the Simpsons titles if the show were to ever end.
I'm not sure the Simpsons show is bringing in new fans.
It may not be bringing in new fans, but is it keeping... Well, it's had a 25-year run. By that point, people could just start over at the beginning because they would have forgotten it or show it to their kids at that age. I've just seen other properties that once the show it's based on ends, it kind of peters out a little, but I think Simpsons is likely to be an exception to that.
I tend to agree.
It may be kind of the Archie of our generation.
Yeah, exactly. Where is it? Come on.
Archie?
No.
What?
Talking of shows that ended and have continued. Rank 207, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 11, number 7. Still selling 10,500 books, essentially.
That's...
Again, rank 207.
That's an interesting one, though, because if you look back at how that has sold over history...
That was a top 10 book when it first started.
Or... right on the edges of it. It was certainly 150,000 plus for its first issue, and then still over the 100,000 for the next couple. If you look at that first season 8 volume that started in 2007, it started, like I said, 152,309. By the time it ended, it was down at 47,013 units at the end of, nearing the end of, I guess the beginning of 2010, actually, January 2010. The next volume picked up, when did season 9 pick up? It picked up in, I think, October 2011. I guess they had maybe some other stuff in between. Starting at 36,448, ending up at 20,392 units in September of 2013. When it relaunched in March 2014, it had a little bit of a spike on the first issue, 27,851 units. Within, frankly, 2-3 issues, it was right where the previous season had been. It had a spike in October, maybe a variant cover or some such, don't know. Everything else is pretty much straight on the trend line that the previous two volumes had kind of settled into. With, again, that season 8 having the sharpest decline, it being, sloping to more of a leveling off kind of ish thing with season 9 and then 10 ending up at 12,119. And then the season 11, again, pretty much picking up right where it left off sales-wise. It's the kind of thing, if this had been a single title, the sales line wouldn't have been really any different other than really, I think, the one or two issues at the start of season 10, which I'm presuming, again, like I said, are variant covers or whatnot, which you could have just as easily gotten with a bump of either changing the writer, the artist, or a promotional push of variant cover. But it's now selling really a tenth what it had been early on. When did the show end? Well, I guess obviously before 2007, because this is season 8, and that was a stupid question. Why do you let me do that? I don't know. I think the other thing that was a little bit of a bump in the road for the Buffy property was when, I guess, the Angel part of that franchise went over to a different publisher for a little bit. I guess it was IDW and then came back to Dark Horse.
Was it IDW? I remember Ron Mars was writing it at the time. He was writing Angel and Alaria, I believe, was the other title.
I think so. I thought it was IDW, but I don't remember.
It could have been. It was the same time he was doing the Top Cow books, though. Like Witchblade. I know that.
Yeah. Getting them back under the same publisher was just a smart move. Oh. Item 300, we talked about the sales of 5,254 units. That item happened to be Copperhead number 13. That's a J. Farber book, which I happen to like. Nice. If you like Firefly, Serenity, it's that kind of a vibe, very different kind of a story, but that, you know, Old West in space sort of thing. So worth considering. We have any other major winners or losers? All right, we talked about promotional pricing and stuff like that. If we go to rank 251 for a second with Sovereigns number one.
Yep.
This is Dynamite's latest attempt to get the Gold Key characters into play. It is down 71.95% from the Zero issue. Of course, Zero issue was $1, and this is $3.99. So when the price goes up by four times and the sales drop almost correspondingly, there's only so many dollars retailers are willing to put into this, I think.
Yeah.
We've seen that sort of thing before. I think it's good to put the promotional price out there, but I don't think we really see the benefit of it reflected in the ongoing sales afterwards. I guess as tempted as I might be as a publisher to say, hey, if I could just saturate the market, let's get that first issue out there cheap. That'll get us the sales. The evidence indicates that's a bad idea. It just doesn't. I think they might have been better off having a $3.99 price on that Zero issue potentially. They'd have sold less, made more, and probably come out ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Do we have any crazy late books? There's one that had a 55 in that column, but that's really not late. That's the second Lazarus Source book. That really only comes out once a year, if that. So that's fine. That's weeks since previous issue. That's not weeks late. Weeks late, I'm looking at the wrong column. What is... We've got a few that are... Two. Oh, we got a 37 in there. That's Four Kids Walk Into a Bank. Between issue 3 and 4, that was a 21-week gap between those issues. Wow. That's not good for story momentum. Yeah, that's the main one that had a crazy delay. By and large, I don't think delays are that bad these days. I think, if anything, the problem is the inverse. Books are coming out too fast. I'm certainly having a hell of a time keeping current. I'm failing miserably, and with Comic-Con coming up, that's going to get even worse.
Yeah.
Again, don't know what the right answer to that is, because, you know, old books coming out too fast, too slow. It's hard to find that just right, though. If we, you got anything else on the list that looked interesting to you?
No, I think I've covered everything that I kind of had marked or looked at or noticed.
Actually, I got two other things. Maybe sure. Three, two other. 133, Black Panther and the Kree number 2.
Hang on, I got a Marvel DC back in here. Okay, yes, 133.
18,183 units. That is down 48.93% from the first issue. This is becoming a series of Black Panther secondary titles that aren't working or aren't selling. The other being Worlds of Wakanda, which ended, which made room more or less for this. Maybe if they put Black Panther in the title, it would work. Monsters Unleashed, man, this one, when I first crunched the numbers, confused the hell out of me. When I crunch the numbers, I do the cleaning, I do all the stuff. When I get the first pass of it, I look at it, I look at the reorder items, just to make sure I don't have, you know, like a Batman being attributed to, you know, the wrong volume or something like that. I'm probably still making mistakes, but anyways. Monsters Unleashed had the 2017 volume, which is the mini-series event that didn't do too great. And then the 2017B, which is the ongoing title. And Monsters Unleashed of 2017, the event, number one, had more reorder activity than issue 2 of the ongoing had. And there was also, I think, some other reorder activity of Monsters Unleashed, the miniseries, down at rank 243 or whatever. So to me, this is really mixed signals. It may be that the event is doing a little bit better over time than I would have expected, because, again, it didn't do well for tie-ins or whatever. And while the ongoing series second issue is down 43.9%, we actually had, I think, more reorder activity for the miniseries, let's see, 25,246 units between the two issues, than... That almost equals the sales of the first issue of the ongoing series, but not quite. So down about 2,000.
I'm confused what's going on here completely. And I listened to this whole thing. So they're reordering a miniseries, not the ongoing, that's older than the current ongoing.
Earlier in the year, there was a miniseries that was done by Colin Bunn and Steve McNiven
Okay,
fantastic
yes.
art, brought back a lot of the classic Marvel monsters. 5-issue miniseries, out of which spun out a title. Colin Bunn is writing it, but Dave Baldion is the artist. Still good art, but Steve McNiven, not so much. And ongoing. So the ongoing one is again, dropped 43.9%.
Yep, I got that.
And so, meanwhile, we're seeing strong reorder activity on the original series.
Okay, so this is reorder activity from several months.
Yeah.
Not the series that's currently ongoing.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to make sure. I thought that's what was going on, but it didn't make any sense.
That's why I was puzzled when I was crunching the numbers on this.
Yeah.
And frankly, if the Monsters Unleashed number 2 reorder activity at 243 hadn't been on there, I might have cleaned this up wrong. This is where tallying the numbers every month is a little bit more confusing than people might realize. Other thing to point out is there was reorder activity on the regular versions of Batman and Flash 21 at ranks 162 and 235.
The fact that we had 9 items of reorder activity in the top 300 is a little unusual in general.
First issues of X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold are in there. We usually have a couple of items reorder, but you're right. The number we had is a little high.
Yeah, 1 or 2 is normal. 9 is a little high.
Rank 144, Drew and I reviewed Nick Fury. He gave an F to the first issue of that. I think he's since rethought it. Maybe he thought he was a little harsh. Don't know. Second issue, we've got sales of it there at rank 144. It dropped 47.32% to 16,690 units. This is one that if we see a 7th issue of, I will be surprised. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 19 actually shot up quite a bit to 14,244 units. And I'm not entirely sure what's going on with that one off the top of my head. Let me double check if there were crazy variants on this one. Apparently I've searched too far. I must search the other way in the retailer order form. There we go. This is issue 20, heading of
19.
I'm in the wrong order, retailer order form. Okay. That's what the problem is. I'm like, I'm not seeing 19. It had a 1 in 25 cover and a regular cover. That's not enough to account for a 78.81% increase.
No, it isn't. Any change in the creative team or...
No. It had the marvelous first appearance of Girl Moon, and I thought that was actually not a bad story, but... Or start of a story.
Girl Moon.
Debating if I want to give that away, what the hell, I will.
Okay, so it had the first appearance of a character that's not obviously not obvious to a semi-well-informed comic reader.
It is a brand new character.
Okay.
Afterwards, I'll tell you who I think the character is related to.
Whatever. So it had the appearance of a new character.
Yes.
But a new auxiliary character in a book selling 7,000 units still shouldn't account for that kind of an increase.
Yes. It should not have not quite, but almost doubled in sales.
Yeah.
So definitely interesting. And again, sometimes it's really hard to pinpoint what the heck's going on with some of this stuff. We look at the price points. Let's see, 219 of the top 300 items are at $399. It's also 247 of the 339 items I have total. In addition to the top 300, there were scattered items as far down as rank 433. And that item, which was actually Alterna Comics Lilith's Dark number 1, it sold 2,742 units. So, I mean, again, the list obviously goes down the further down you go, but nothing that's like it suddenly plummets.
And talking price points for a second, a trend we noticed last month that is continuing, a full 10% of the list is at $4.69 or more.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, not only is $3.99 commonplace at 73% of the list, there's another full 10% over that.
Well, and the number of things at $2.99 continues to be the DC twice monthly books, a couple of things like Walking Dead and stuff, but it's $3.99 is the price point, and I think publishers are trying to feel out
4 and 5.
Yeah, where that next price point's going to be. And I hope they don't move to it too soon, because there was a lot of pushback on $399. It took them years to get to the point where that was almost accepted, and I think only begrudgingly so. And I think it was the most serious amount of pushback we've had on a price point so far, ever. And again, it gets to the point where I get that they've got to increase the price with the sales the way they're at and such like that, paper costs, printing costs, creative costs, etc. But for a 20-page story?
Lack of sales.
Yeah.
Makes all those other things seem much more expensive.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was first looking into if I wanted to go into creating comics and stuff, you would see the sales of the 100,000 or whatever, and you'd say, okay, I've got to do 20 or 17 pages or whatever the number of pages was at the time. 22, maybe. Okay, page rate would be about this at the time, which was cheaper than it is now, but not massively so. But you amateurize that or whatever over the number of units you expect to sell, and it's really not that bad. Now the creative cost is a huge amount of it. I think as much or more than the printing costs. So when people say, oh, well, if it's digital, it should be practically free. It's like, well, you still gotta pay to create the content. Again, if I were going into publishing, I had said this multiple times, finding a way to make the stuff much cheaper to produce seems like a necessity. Because we're at the point where we've already had one Marvel title dip below the top 300. There was another one at 295 this time, the final issue of Mosaic, number 8, 5,507 units. That's a Marvel title. In the mainstream Marvel universe, he's an inhuman.
Well, but as Denver Dinosaur just proved, there's a chance, you know, he could be at 20,000 next month.
No, there isn't. If they ended the title.
Oh, well, then there really isn't.
Other than that, yes, I would agree with that. They could do a 1 in 1,000 variant, maybe, I don't know. Come on. It's crazy. It's crazy. Units this time around, again, better than we'd seen all year, but still not crazy great. To me, that's, you see one picture when you look at a title-by-title thing, how the trends are going. You see a different one when you look at the aggregate sales for the top 300 over time. Because those, there can be a pretty wide swing in it, you know, 20, 30% up or down, depending. But it falls within a pretty set range of anywhere on the low 4.5 million to a high of 9.5 million or whatever. If we were really seeing kind of the upsurgence of sales that the overall interest in comic-based properties seemed to have successfully gotten in the mainstream awareness, we should be seeing better sales. But either because people don't want to read, because they can't find the stores, they're just not interested, have other things, or whatever, we're not seeing that kind of sales success. And there's going to come a point where if they can't stop apathy and reader attrition and such, and we don't get more titles selling above, you know, 40, 50,000 or whatever, I question how much longer this whole mechanism, the way it is, the business model right now, how long it can succeed. Or if they're making enough money by doing the TV shows, the movies, the video games, the t-shirts, etc., that these can effectively be loss leaders and a incubation period or process for IP, if that works for enough companies to keep it going. I don't know.
Here's the thing. I don't see massive layoff or cutback announcements, so I gotta believe somehow they're making money. Obviously, we don't easily see how that is, but I do think it is true. Trust me, Disney would not allow them to just lose money for no reason.
I don't think they're losing money, but I don't think the comics are making the money. Again, I think the licensing and other stuff is what's keeping a lot of the doors open. And I think at some of these publishers, Marvel and DC, you're not seeing the big name creators as much as we're seeing a lot of these people. It's like, I've never heard of them, or they're up and comers. Because they're cheaper.
Yeah, maybe.
So I do think there is some cost-cutting measures going on. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing necessarily right with that either. But if we look at, real quick, just the main areas where sales have kind of shifted and why and stuff. Well, we had an upswing of 590,130 units this month from last month. We had new titles bringing in 1.2 million units. Obviously, some of that was offset by losses from suspended titles, defunct titles, that dropping that total by 886,522 units. Really, once you kind of net that out with the increase from the new titles, you start to get, you know, it's about half of a little more than half of the increase.
Yep.
It really, how the month does depends on how the new titles do. If the new titles don't bring in a huge amount of sales, it's a down month. And in this case, most of the increase of new sales and such, pretty sure was Secret Empire, because not only was it a new title, it had three issues come out nearing the top of the list. So that title alone accounted for...
Would those be considered new since the Zero was already pre-existing?
You are correct. That was actually more issues. It was not new. You are correct. I was forgotten about that Zero issue for a second.
But with all those number ones we did talk about.
Yeah.
Jean Grey, the Cable, all the Guardians books.
Well, and again, Marvel had a really kind of a strong month. So most of the upswing was Marvel books, just the way it goes. Between bringing in more issues of Secret Empire, having all the new number ones, that kind of a thing. And that means maybe next month's not going to be so great for Marvel, because we're going to get... granted, we got a lot of the second issue drops already.
Yeah, we did. But we're starting to see some more of those legacy books, don't we, next month?
I'm not sure when those kick in. I haven't looked far enough forward on that. I thought we had a little more time before the legacy books kicked in.
Well, Venom's already on this list, so...
Yeah, I'm doing good just to keep up with what I've read, much less what's coming out. I live in this bizarre time bubble of a week or two back for the weekly comic spotlight, a month or two forward for the previews, and it's funny because with as fast as these things are coming out, the honeymoon period is still a certain calendar amount of time. We're seeing some titles get in and out before that happens. Others, the speed with which they drop down the list is fast. I really am going to be curious to see how the legacy numbering approach at Marvel, if it has any serious impact at all, because I do not think the problem is the issue numbers.
I agree, but again, we did see what happened with Venom.
Yes, but that wasn't the number so much as the promotional push they put with it. The 1 in 1,000, the 1 in 2,000. And what we'll probably see is as they go to the legacy numbers, they'll do those kinds of crazy variants. We'll see the flash in the pan sales bump. Those variants go away, and boom, we're right back to pretty much where we'd been before. So we'll see what happens. There's always some new shenanigan going on. It feels like at times there's always something new to talk about, and there's always the same old, well, sales are down. But we're also at the time of the year where, with things like San Diego, we're going to have potentially a lot of new announcements and stuff like that from some of the publishers. Certainly, I hope to talk to a lot of these publishers and creators and stuff at Comic-Con, see what they have to say, both in terms of do they like the coverage we're doing and what questions they have on stuff. Because invariably, there's a couple of creators, hey, could you look up the numbers on this? I'm curious about this, that, or the other, which is fun to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I expect that next set of numbers to come out pretty much right as I head out of town for Comic-Con. So it may take me a little longer than usual to get them crunched, certainly longer than usual for us to get together and talk about it. So it may well be inside of early August before we get the episodes recorded, much less up, which would then be followed by the next month, probably shortly thereafter. But, you know,
or we do it in person.
Yeah, that's certainly an option too, actually. But I'm looking forward to the next couple of sets of numbers just to see how Secret Empire evolves and where some of this other stuff is going, because I think there's some really great comics out there. I get reassured when something like Lazarus Contract, even if I didn't care for the contents of the story, it got people excited about the Titans books, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
You know, so hopefully things like Comic-Con and whatnot will get people excited, and maybe we'll see a little bit more interest in the comics and sales benefit part of it.
Hopefully.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo, his guests, are their own, and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or a few scanned items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.